Yo, hey, we are back with another episode of Dialogue Heavy with yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. What up, good evening, good night, wherever you are. Thank you for listening to your boy. As you know, we got to be intentional and deliberate with everything we want in this life. So I will tell you two things. One, I'm trying to share these stories with my friends, family, and fans. And two, garner the attention from the people that can eventually help me get my story out to the world. So we are in chapter two of Hindsight, the story of an elder gentleman named Bernard, Mr. Beansy. He is a doorman at a very humongous, prolific building in Manhattan, New York. He's the guy that opens the door, gets you in the elevator, gets you to your million-dollar homes, and make sure that everything is safe and nobody that's not supposed to be in the building is not in the building. There's only one problem for Mr. Bernard, and it's of a terrible nature. Mr. Bernard is about to be thrown out on his ass. He's been working at this place. The Waldorf Estates is the actual name of it. And he's been working there for 25 years. He's an older guy, so he doesn't have very many options as well. And he's about to be thrown out. So he has to figure out what he's going to do with his life. He hasn't saved up a ton of money. And he's the only person in his family that lives in New York. So he's going to figure out what to do. So that's what happened in the first chapter. He woke up out of a dream that said that, hey, you only got a little bit of time left to live on this planet, so you need to get moving. And when he came to work, that's what happened. He heard two people that live at the Waldorf say that they're gonna eliminate the contract in which Mr. Beansy works. So he's gonna have to figure out what he's gonna do next. And in chapter number two, he's gonna start off on that new plan. So I'm not even gonna talk too much to you guys about it. I'm just gonna get into it. This is gonna be chapter two of Hindsight. So as you know, everything on this podcast, the Dialogue Heavy podcast, has been written and at this point recited by yours truly, Michael Anthony McMillan. So without further ado, I bring to you chapter two of Hindsight. Here we go. Atop my to-do list was to figure out who my allies were that lived in the building without raising any suspicion. But the question was, how? The building housed 125 units, and I knew every last one of them, but it didn't mean that they would vouch for me in a bind. The most important people, as far as power goes, just voted to have me thrown into the gutter, so it would be a puzzle and an uphill battle, to say the least. Miss Gailey, the unconventional thinker and uber-smart investor, put her parents' college tuition for her in the stock market at 18 in the 80s, and made out like a fat cat when her returns for investing in Apple and Microsoft in their infancy made her the first and only multimillionaire in her family. Now, she pleaded on my part and Federico's in the past and could probably be trusted, so I aligned my lunch break with the exact time she went out to walk her beloved Fifi that day. Anxiety-ridden, I sat deep in the Great Central Park on a bench overlooking Swan Lake and fed the pigeons bred from my gyro, watching the world pass by. The last snow was defrosting where the pavement hit the grass. The trees were sprouting fresh leaves, and the sun made a welcome comeback to every active soul running and walking the pathways. Bernard? What are you doing out here? Miss Gailey asked from afar, while Fifi was already making her presence known, licking my hand. Oh, having lunch, I said. Beautiful day, isn't it? You know, I don't think I've ever seen you out here before. Ah, just change of pace, I said while wrapping up the scraps of my lunch. And the weather change helps. Oh, I know, Miss Gailey said. And Fifi and I had to use the treadmill for the last 4 months. Just dreadful. I bet, I said. But yeah, I like to come out here and think, you know, about, oh, you know, my future, what I'll do next, whatever. Well, what did you come up with? Nothing yet, really. I figure I got a couple years left with you guys in the building, then maybe I'll head back home. Find the lady that can deal with my craziness and ride off into the sunset, you know? Well, you've been saving, I hope, Miss Gately said. Well, no, I answered. But I figure if I start now, I should have enough to take care of what the VA won't cover. Bernard, you don't have anything? Nope. Oh my God, Miss Gately said as she sat as little Fifi pranced over to a neighboring tree to handle some private business. That's just not smart, Bernard. What would happen if you lost your job? Oh, Miss Gately, that wouldn't happen, Bernard, because Bernard! I can trust you guys, I said. Surely I'd get some type of warning, if so, right? Miss Gately looked at me in my eyes for a long time with genuine concern, and I knew right then that I had her. After that rude awakening, I could barely focus, either through my remaining shift or the L train back home. I passed by the usual people and joints I frequented and made it to my place 20 minutes earlier than usual. Miss Gately had told me everything about how I was to depart the Waldorf, and I was not as special to them as I thought I was. Elite Door Service, the company I worked for, would lose their contract with the Waldorf at the end of term, which was in 2 weeks, and I would be out on the streets. I would not be hired by the new service because the rate was fixed and it was impossible for me to live on what they were paying the new guys. And to make things worse, Elite Door Service would be closing its doors too, as the Waldorf was its last client. In short, I was fucked. Proper fucked. And I had nobody but myself to blame for it. Yeah, I had lied to Miss Gately about not knowing anything about what was going to happen, but what I didn't lie about was having savings. I could have done way better in that department, even if I didn't make a fraction of those living at the Waldorf. But a single man with no friends and no real prospects has to have a life outside of work and has to have something to do with his free time. But my choices of free time were of extreme levels, and they would end up almost getting me killed. Basically, if you could put a wager on it, I was in. From tiddlywinks to roulette, and I couldn't get enough. To describe it, it felt like I was hanging off a cliff, one-handed with death staring you right in the face. Then boom, with the flip of a coin or the last turn of some dice, bam, I was back to life. You don't quite understand the thrill of a half-court buzzer beater or a knockout in the last minute of the last round or your horse coming in from behind and winning by a nose unless you put your rent money on the line. And it was what I lived for. It was better than booze. It was better than sex. Somehow, it was even better than the cash one. I just had to have the win and be able to say I told you so with my hand out. I love seeing my bookies piss. They would shake their heads, curse me, even threaten me, but they had to pony up the cash. Now, contrary to popular belief, gambling addicts know the house always wins. How could they not? We are the ones gambling money meant for bills and mortgage payments, but the problem is, when you have a problem, sadly, you don't care. So, as a degenerate, I, of course, made some bets my Waldorf checks couldn't cash, and that's when I ran into problems. Some really big problems. Dino was my bookie, a 5'4" Italian midget with a little man's complex. He had slick black hair, combed back, with craters the size of pennies all over his face. The leather black jacket and black slacks he wore were his uniform, and if you saw him on pay-up day, you better have it or you better run. I usually didn't have it, so I ran, but the beatings were less severe if you can dodge him and make some money elsewhere before he and his crew caught up to you. I'm telling you, I've never seen the evil a single human could possess until I met Dino, but I did after. When I placed a bet and paid on time, he was my best friend, but when I lost and didn't have the money, those eyes turned into black holes. Next thing you know, something on your body was broken, shattered, or fractured, and Dino had a distinct talent to make sure it was something important. After that, you were in his pocket. Rule number one of gambling, you never want to be in anybody's pocket, but especially not Dino's. His VIG, interest to you non-gamblers, rivaled any high interest rate credit card, but Dino didn't send you a bill. He sent you to the hospital. Then you were just chasing it, gambling just to pay the VIG on time, which was his goal from bet number one. Dino and his kind of people were the original Visa and MasterCard, but the penalties could cost you your life. It almost cost me mine a few times. I've been beaten, strangled, and had my head forced in a few toilets over the years, but I finally cleaned up, made a deal with Dino, and paid back every penny that was owed. I avoided him like the plague after that. And after that final payment, and I avoided him like the plague after that final payment, but it didn't stop him from calling me to see if I wanted action on a game here and there. I can never understand how the same person that beat the living daylights out of you could pick you up off the ground and ask you what you got on the Knicks tonight. But Dino knew what Vegas, the credit card companies, liquor stores, and any old run-of-the-mill drug dealer knew. Once an addict, always an addict. Now, I had heard through the grapevine that Dino's bosses had some connections with people like Mr. Ehlers and Calhoun, and it didn't surprise me. The organization, or the mafia, as it's known commercially, has never been far away from any money that's ever been made in New York. Those roots run deep, but I never asked Dino about it because it was none of my business, and I was chump change in comparisons. But I was always suspicious about this man that came into the Waldorf once a month. He too had slick black hair with the black jacket and black sweats, and he went to only one place, Mr. Calhoun's. He came in every third of the month at 8 a.m. sharp and was out before 8:15. And the two duffel bags that he brought with him were filled when he left. He struggled with them so much that I asked if I can help him with them once and was met with those same Dino pay me my fucking money eyes. And I never asked again. Like clockwork, on those days I'd get the call from Mr. Calhoun 5 minutes before 8, meet Mr. Slick Black Hair at the service entrance in the alley, and let him up the rear elevator. By 8:15, the same situation was reversed and he would be gone until the next month. I never said a word to him, or he to me, after that first exchange. I knew that would be my shot. My only shot at getting some real money and getting the fuck out of Dodge. I didn't have much time to plan the hit or have the escape plan. And even if I pulled it off, Mr. Calhoun would probably use the organization to find me, so it would be a short-lived vacation anyway. But it was that or go back to Tennessee and be a 65-year-old McDonald's new hire, so I had to take my shot. One thing I wasn't going to do was let anybody helping me not know the consequences if we got caught. And there was only one person in the world who hated the Waldorf board more than me while knowing the building plans even better. Frederico. The only problem was, he hated me, too. And boom! So there you go, guys. There you have it. Hindsight. Chapter 2. Our guy, Mr. Beansy, Bernard, is about to try to see what he can do with this situation. So you're able to get some backstory on him and get to see that he had some issues. He wasn't just the perfect doorman. I guess he has some gambling problems, and it's coming together pretty good. I know it's been a second since I did chapter one in hindsight, but you know, got through some stuff and everything like that, but that's beyond the point. Had a tough couple of weeks, but we're all good now. So I'm going to continue trying to do this. I'm going to try to make it as consistent as possible so you can get the rest of this story every Wednesday morning until we finish it, but that's all I got for now. So that's it. Hindsight chapter 2, man. I'll catch you guys next week. Thank you so much for listening. Hope you liked it. Hope you loved it. And if you didn't, hope you learned something from it. So I'll talk to you later. And that's it. I'll see you guys later. Peace. I'm out of here.